what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us today on this Tuesday, sunny Tuesday in Southwest Florida. And I hope it's a beautiful day wherever you are. Welcome to everybody. Be ye here locally or around the country, around the world. We're very pleased to have you along with us today. We've got a variety of subjects to talk about today. No big blockbuster today. I suppose nothing that we haven't spoken about a little bit before. We're not going to talk about Paris Hilton, I guess. I guess you all know about that. The media is keeping everybody well-versed on the latest adventures or misadventures of one Paris Hilton. I think it was, her eighth day in the jail, or prison, as they like to say. And she's found God, and going to be a role model, and all that kind of stuff. So, we shall see. Want to say hello to all of our friends up in Ohio. My goodness, we were there over the weekend for commencement at Otterbein College in Westerville. For those of you that don't know, that's a suburb of Columbus. And had my niece graduating, and I might say magna cum laude. Congratulations. And congratulations to the some 500 graduates of Otterbein College this year, a very small, exclusive college. And OSU had their commencement this weekend as well, and one Mr. William Jefferson Clinton was the commencement speaker. So lucky OSU getting Bill Clinton for their speaker. Of course, if OSU can't get Bill Clinton, who could? Right? Right. He's not going to speak up at the University of Michigan, I'm sure. He's got more sense than that. There we go. Let the OSU-Michigan rivalry out of the bag. We welcome you to call the program today if you like. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. It's toll-free. And if you're one of the folks lucky enough to have Vonage or one of the unlimited calling plans, you can call us at 941-876-6896. Or, we've got several other numbers, 202-370-6153 for our Washington Bureau, and our Phoenix Bureau, 623-444-5252. So, join us. We'll be glad to have you along with us today. Talking about a variety of subjects on the program today. I don't think we're going to get real heavy. I do want to let you know that next week we will be doing a live program next Monday here from 3 to 5. Monday and Tuesday we're going to be coming to you from the Washington Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C., where the Campaign for America's Take Back America conference will be taking place. And we will be on Radio Row there and broadcasting live and hope to have some interesting guests. Always an interesting event. Thousands of activist Democrats will be there, along with most of the presidential candidates. As I look at the list now, and you can check that out at Campaign for America's Future or Take Back America, either one. Most of the Democratic, if not all the Democratic presidential candidates will be there. None of the Republican candidates will be there, so you can relax. And there'll be a big exhibition hall, and I know the draft Al Gore people are going to be there. I've been in touch with them, and I'm not sure if Tom's going to be there or not. So someone asked if Tom Hartman's going to be there. I think Tom will probably be there. Air America will probably have a representative there. Not sure who else, but they said they told me it's a bigger and better Radio Row than they've ever had. And my goodness, with me being there last year, how could it be any better this year? I don't know. Anyway, we're excited about being there for that. Always happy to go to Washington. I do enjoy that town. As corrupt and stinking smelly as it has become the past few years, I still enjoy the history of it, the great tradition in Washington, D.C. Some good traditions, some not so good. Not very proud of what's going on there right now, I have to tell you. Not happy at all. I feel very, very disappointed by our Democratic Congress. And I know that nobody's going to satisfy us 100% of the time, but I'm not at all pleased with the way the Democrats have behaved so far. The no vote, no confidence vote on Gonzalez that was held yesterday turned out to be a joke once again. To no one's surprise, the no-confidence resolution failed to reach the 60 votes they needed to invoke cloture or cut off the debate on it. And it did get a majority. I think it was 53-38. And, of course, Joe Lieberman, the faux Democrat, independent. What the hell is Joe Lieberman anyway? What was wrong with the people in Connecticut? Why the hell didn't they get rid of Joe Lieberman? Why? I do not understand that. I will never understand that. That's the one big thing I've held against Al Gore all these years and will always. I love Al Gore. But when he announced that Joe Lieberman was going to be his vice presidential candidate, I thought, oh, my God, no. No, 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 please, not Joe Lieberman. I couldn't stand him then. I can't stand him now. I can't stand him more and more each and every day. Of course, 53-38, we had several Republicans voted along with us, Coleman and Collins and Smith and Sununu. Seven people didn't vote at all. Ted Stevens of Alaska, stupid bastard that he is in so many different ways, and I'm sorry for saying that about a United States senator. No, I'm not about him. The guy's a complete idiot, has no business being in the United States Senate. If Alaska can't do any better than that, they better secede from the Union and start all over again. Ted Stevens is an embarrassment to the United States Senate. He's an embarrassment to the great state of Alaska. And I don't know what it's going to take to get weasels like him out of the United States Senate. He's just a disgusting individual. But he voted present, didn't have the cojones to vote either way on it. And, of course, let's see, not voting, Joe Biden, Brownback, Coburn of Oklahoma, and, of course, Christopher Dodd and Johnson, of course, not well enough to vote. McCain could have voted, but he didn't bother to show up for it. Obama didn't vote in it. And Lieberman voted with the Republicans, so... What do the Democrats do this for? What do they announce? Why do they announce they're going to do something, make a big to-do out of it, get out and bluster and do all their puffery and so forth and then have it shoved in their face by the Republicans over and over and over again? Why do they do that? You know, it's like the appropriations bill. How they were going to stick it to Bush on this. They were going to show him. This Congress is such a do-nothing Congress, and I see the polls are starting to show that. Approval of Congress is the lowest that it's been in a decade, and that's saying something. From the LA Times, it says, fueled by disappointment at the pace of change since Democrats assumed the majority on Capitol Hill, public approval of Congress is falling to its lowest level in more than a decade, according to a new Los Angeles Times Bloomberg poll. Just 27%. Of Americans now approve of the way Congress is doing its job. 27%, down from 36% in January when Democrats took over the House and the Senate. And 63% of Americans saying that the new Democratic Congress is governing in a business-as-usual manner. Yeah, I think so. Rather than working to bring the fundamental change that party leaders promised after November's midterm election, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the first woman to hold that position, has also failed to impress very many Americans. Only 36% approve the way she's handling her job, this LA Times Bloomberg poll found. So, popularity of the Democrats plummeting. Congress, in on the whole, the lowest it's been in a decade. We all had high hopes that the new Democrats, the new sheriffs coming to town, would bring some cojones, some much-needed change. So far, they've done nothing. Nothing that I can see that's been of any substance at all. Harry Reid, as many of you know, I don't have a lot of confidence in Harry Reid. I never did. Now and then, he appears to rally the troops, but when they get into the thick of battle, then he backs off and runs and hightails it every time. Every time. He's good at the rhetoric. Well, he's not so good at even that, but he's good at blustering. He really is. But when it's time to fight the fight, Harry usually turns tail and runs. His favorable rating has fallen to 19%. 19%. Seems to me a certain vice president of the United States, we were all hooting and hollering here a while back, his popularity had fallen to an abysmal 19% as well, and now we have the Senate Majority Leader's favorable rating down to 19%. And while I'm not sure he's quite as bad as that number suggests, I'm not thrilled with him at the moment. It was completely foolish and detrimental to the Democrats to go ahead with this no-confidence crap when he knew he didn't have the 60 votes he needed to get to the point where he could force the Republicans on the record. He knew it. So why did they go ahead with it? Why didn't they just table it and forget about it? Rather than get smashed in the face once again and make the Democrats look like a bunch of fools. I don't understand. I really don't. The Republicans stay in complete lockstep, even though we have the most unpopular president in several decades. The Republicans hang in there every time. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the conversation. Lieberman. Did you see Lieberman Sunday? You know, there's our friend Ken Granlund sent me his thoughts on it. He said, you know, there's something about being an independent politician that must allow these maverick people's candidates like Joe Lieberman to feel free to speak their minds, especially when doing so goes against the grain of not just their supposed peers, but most of the country, including their constituents as well. Sometimes these kinds of political statements are refreshing, opening what may seem to the common citizen to be a common sense approach to a particular problem or issue. But other times, though, and especially when coming from the mouth of a politician who only found the calling of independence when he lost his party's primary nomination, and his ego couldn't face the fact that his base no longer wanted him to be their voice in Congress, the things that escape from the lips of an elected official are enough to make you shiver. And the case in point, the perfect case in point, is Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman. On Sunday, he declares, and let me quote Joe Lieberman, said, I think we've got to be prepared to take aggressive military action against the Iranians to stop them from killing Americans in Iraq, Lieberman told Bob Schieffer. And he says, to me, that would include a strike unto over the border into Iran, where we have good evidence that they have a base at which they're training these people coming back into Iraq and to kill our soldiers. And, of course, he gave us the usual political bullshit that we usually hear from senators. Joe Biden's the one in particular that always comes to mind. Oh, I was just over there, and, you know, I was just there, and I talked to everybody in the region. I talked to Israel. Of course he did. I talked to people from the other countries. Talked to Saudis. I talked to, you know, the Iraqis, and I talked to everybody in the region, and they think, you know, something's got to be done about Iran. Sniveling fool. Sniveling fool that's got no business being in the United States Senate. None whatsoever. None. And he comes back after meeting with the Israelis. And wants to let us know that we need to take military action against Iran. Oh, how convenient. Oh, how convenient. Mr. Lieberman thinks we ought to go bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Him and Mr. McCain got something in common on that, don't they? Of course, Lieberman and the Republicans all have something in common. They're Republicans. That's why. That's what. 866-546-5254. Let's take a visit over to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Susan in Columbia City.
Hello.
What I want to know is, is the media going to go after these three presidential candidates for not bothering to vote? Not so much that they voted one way or the other, they just bothered to vote at all.
Well, you know, that's they're getting paid, what is it, $168,000 a year, whatever, to go out and campaign. We're not only paying them to be in the Senate, we're paying them to go out and campaign as well. And of course, campaigning is a lot more important than doing their duty and voting when a vote comes up. It's terrible that their feet are not being held to the fire. It really is.
What's ironic is my Republican senator even voted for this.
Ah.
he's about as right wing as you get. But these guys couldn't even be bothered to get off the pot. I mean, it just, I'll come right out and say it, they're cowards.
Well, so many, you know, we've heard several senators say that if they took an anonymous vote in the halls of Congress or went up and down the Senate office building and took a head count, said it would be 100-0. But when it comes to the public, they don't have the guts to vote the way they ought to and give him a no-confidence vote. Everybody thinks he ought to be out, but they don't have the guts to come out and say so in front of their constituency, and they don't have the guts to buck the president in public either.
Well, these Democrats are going to find out when they start facing primary challenges. This has not been a good plan to follow.
Well, it isn't, but the thing is, they know they have the power of the incumbency, and they know they have the power to raise a lot more money than a challenger in most cases.
I understand that, but also the 2004 election showed them the power of a very aroused and very irate electorate, and we're just sitting here getting madder.
Oh, to be sure. I absolutely agree. But it's a tough road to hoe, as Ned Lamont would certainly testify. It's tough knocking out an incumbent.
I understand that.
Very, very tough. Ned Lamont looked really good for a while, and man, when the rubber finally met the road, he was thumped pretty good in that race.
Well, maybe he wouldn't have been if the Republican Party had paid for it.
Oh yeah, they certainly helped. They certainly helped put Lieberman in too. I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah, Lieberman's nothing but a Republican, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, you have a real nice day, Guy.
Thanks.
And it's been nice talking to you.
Good to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joe Lieberman, my favorite United States senator with firm tongue firmly planted in cheek. Can't stand the guy. Never good. I remember the day that the Gore campaign announced that he was going to be the vice presidential candidate. And, oh, God, no. Oh, no. Of all the people that you had to choose from, you took Joe Lieberman. Why'd you do it? From an area of the country where Democrats were strong anyway, it made no political sense to me. Did he really think he was going to get the Miami vote with Joe Lieberman? Really? Who knows? We might have gotten the Miami vote and probably did, but if we did, it sure as hell was without not doing any part to Joe Lieberman. I would not think. I don't know. Could be wrong on that. Let's head on over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I totally agree with you about Lieberman. I saw him on TV this weekend, and I said something to him about some of the servicemen were saying over there about they didn't know what they were doing there, but he didn't talk to any of them. Oh, yes, I did. And the ones he talked to, of course, they want to stay there forever till everything's all right.
Oh, yeah, and he made some idiotic comment about, well, it's too bad they didn't say what was on their mind if they really felt that way.
I know.
That was a pathetic comment.
I have another thing I'd like to talk about, if you don't mind. It's about a Supreme Court ruling,
yes.
A recent one, that I just think is just horrible. I don't know if you have read about it or not, but it's the court rules against home care workers.
Don't know a lot about it.
Well, what happened was this one lady, this is a job that a lot of older women can do, especially the you know, the nurse's aides from the hospital and all after they get older,
mm-hmm.
or somebody that's worked and they're, these businesses don't want to hire them because they're older, but they can take care of people, and they work in people's homes, or they work for an agency. And they've ruled that, and with the approval of our great labor department, and you know who heads that, Mitchell's wife.
Yeah.
And they're not entitled to overtime pay under federal law. The Supreme Court ruled Monday. This one lady, she's 73, and she's worked, you know, and she appealed, you know, and to get it, and another one, and I don't know, I know people who do this, and I've tried to do it myself. It's not an easy job. It's
no.
a very difficult job if you do it right.
Sure.
And most of the aides that I know do it right. They're one of the hardest working people and get the cheapest pay. And they try to cheat them out of any kind of extra money. It's just horrible. And this, and that one of the people who has a company that has several franchises, I said, well, if they start charging, if they start getting overtime, then the costs are going to go up, and then people are going to just have to hire anybody, and they won't be able to check them. Well, I worked at a retirement home my last job, and oh, yeah, they checked on people, but usually it came after they were hired, and I say half of them weren't qualified. They had something against them.
Well, and heaven forbid, maybe they should shave a little bit off the bottom line and pay people better. But that's not an option.
They already do, and now the Supreme Court, and you know the new union for. What do they call it? The home care workers and the, you know, the ones that do what the other people don't want to do.
Yeah, I
supposedly
really...
the people us, we don't want to clean our toilets or make up our beds, you know.
Oh.
But anyway, it represents the Service Employees International Union. That's a fairly new union, and
mm-hmm.
it's getting to be very powerful. And this is just breaks my heart, I tell you. I don't know, you know, unless you know something about it. I don't may not mean anything, but this is just horrible. And if you think about all the people that they hired as nannies over here from other countries, and they found out that they were misabusing their children, well, it's going to be the same way for old people. But, you know, that's why Bush wants all those people over here. He wants slave workers, and he wants slave workers cheaper than us slave workers.
Well, that particular industry is known for abuse, and it not only abusing their employees, but also known, so many times, and I'm certainly not I'm not painting with a too broad a brush, I hope. A lot of these companies, especially some of the big ones, like you mentioned, the big corporate jobs, patients are abused. People aren't paid enough. It's an endemic problem. It really is.
I would just like to say one thing about the place I worked.
Mm-hmm.
They were good to their staff. They weren't good to their workers, and they weren't good to the people that live there. And that's just what I say.
Well,
I say if you're not going to be good to your workers, at least treat the people who are paying the bills right, but they did not. They just gouged them for all it was worth.
Sure. That seems to be the name of the game. And the problem is there are more and more people under that kind of care every single year.
Right.
And so
there's
potential.
There's got to be something. This country's got to change. It's got to.
Well,
we're all going to go to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
And I think we'll go along with the big bees.
Going to be a pretty big basket.
But I wouldn't mind going along if they go along, too.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go there. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I'm really upset, Guy, about this. This is very terrible.
I'll have to look into it a little bit more. Thanks for your call, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call, we'll be back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. Recently, a horrendously terrible terror plot was foiled in New York City. This fiendish plan to explode JFK Airport was discovered by quick-witted TSA officials at Terminal C, With their keen law enforcement instincts, they knew something was wrong when the suspect was carrying mouthwash that was in a 4-ounce plastic container, significantly higher than the 3 ounces allowed. This sent up a red flag, and the highly trained airport security personnel quickly wrestled the suspect to the ground and detained him. Furthermore, TSA officials witnessed a second suspect put his laptop computer through the scanners without removing it from his case and placing it in a separate bin. This suspect was also wrestled to the ground, and all plotters were renditioned to Syria for intense questioning by interrogation professionals. In the terrorists' desperate attempt to end the non-torturous questioning, they revealed the names of several other terrorists who were discovered smuggling dangerous nail clippers and suspicious shoes through the security checkpoint. The system works. I'd like to thank all the brave TSA officials, bag handlers, and airport coffee and donut dealers who fight the terror war here at home every day and will bring us victory. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm heart of your love and mine. To feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes I'd find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. 'Twould make me sing. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind. All my blues behind. For standing in your heart is where I want to be and long to be. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind.
Back with you here in the Guy James Show. TheGuyJamesShow.com. Don't miss it. Hey, we'd like to thank Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show. And you can check out all the action over at BillyShearsMusic.com. BillyShearsMusic.com. Don't miss out on that. Billy's great website over there. Always got a lot of information on what's coming up with Billy Shears and all his musical exploits. You'll want to see it. BillyShearsMusic.com. 866-546-5254. If you've got unlimited calling and you want to save the show a buck, give us a call at 941-876-6896. Or you can call one of our bureau numbers. Washington, D.C. Bureau, 202-370-6153. Or the Phoenix Bureau at 623-444-5252. Hope you'll join us on the program here today. We enjoy hearing from you. We really do. And whether you agree or disagree, you know, we don't always agree on this program. Sometimes it's better if we don't. I guess people don't like to necessarily hear just choir music all the time, right? How many of you have seen the video of Junior Bush in Albania? I'll bet a lot of you have by now. I was wondering when I heard it before I saw the pictures. I've heard about the overwhelming response to Junior Bush going to Albania, how they just, in Bulgaria, I think, as well, and they just welcomed him like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing that ever happened. I think one of them said the prime minister says the most important person to ever visit. But I wondered, why the hell are they so anxious to see George Bush? And then I found out. That's right. Some of them, you see, don't have wristwatches. Well, there's one more over there that does have a wristwatch now. No wonder they were so happy to see him. One moment, and you'll find this all over the place. It's up at Democratic Underground right now, I think. No, that isn't where I saw that. Where did I see that? Maybe on Crooks and Liars. Junior Bush, he was glad-handing the Albanians on Sunday, and he had a watch with a dark strap on his left wrist. And after shaking hands with all these people, moments later it was gone. Maybe there's a video all over the internet now. You can see it. Did it fall off? Did one of his bodyguards take it off? Or did one of the crowd slip it off his wrist and pocket it? Well, one would I think a person would know if your watch had fallen off. But everybody was grabbing him. So somebody, let's face it, somebody stole his watch. You watch the video. His watch is very definitely on his hand. He always wears a watch. They showed a lot of pictures where he always has got a watch on his left hand. And he was shaking hands with people in Albania. And a few seconds later, that watch is gone. Now, the embassy there said what the local media is saying is absolutely not true, that his watch was not stolen. Well, hey, what happened to it then? Somebody tell us what happened. Someone stole poor Georgie's watch, and now we know why they were so anxious to see him. There were just a lot of people in the crowd who didn't have watches. And what a souvenir, huh? Hey, I stole the president's watch. Yes, sir. Stole the president's watch. And speaking of funny stories, what did I do with my notes on this? Somewhere around here. Did you read that where the Pentagon, a few years back, I think it was in 1994, 1995, was working on this? And I swear to God, I'm not lying about this. I'm not pumping this story up. It's true. It actually happened. The Pentagon was working on a bomb that was affectionately called within the ranks the gay bomb. Mm-hmm. It was a bomb they were going to be able to drop that was loaded with aphrodisiacs of some kind. And was going to make the enemy all turn gay all of a sudden. I swear I'm not kidding. It's the truth. That's right. The gay bomb. Check it out. What did I do with the link I had on that? Got that around here somewhere. I'll find it a little later. I'll give it to you. But honestly, they really did that. They spent like, I don't know, $4, 5, 6, 7 million on something like that. It really happened. My God. The gay bomb. Kind of makes you wonder how our money's getting spent, doesn't it? 866-546-5254. We hope you give us a call here on the Guy James Show today. I'm so disappointed in that bill yesterday. Well, it wasn't a bill. It was just a vote to admonish Gonzalez to give him a no-confidence vote. It's not like anybody has any game. Maybe outside of Junior. Do you suppose Junior still really, 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 truly, really has confidence in Alberto Gonzalez? I wonder. They just make such asses of themselves, though, the Democrats have lately. They pump this up. Well, we're going to show him. Yeah. We're going to pass a no-confidence vote. We're going to embarrass the hell out of Bush. We're going to force his hand on this. Yes, sirree. We're going to be tough because we're Democrats. Yes, yes, yes. We're going to be really, really tough. I don't know how they could be any less tough, and I don't know how much lower their poll numbers can get. But, you know, here they are, the Democrats. They're fresh from selling out the soldiers and the Marines in Iraq by giving Bush that, what was it, around $120 billion to continue funding his war. And then they crowed afterwards that it was some kind of a victory for them. And I don't think they can hide the fact that they gave up on the war issue. They did. But, you know, in typical fashion, they get their asses handed to them on this issue. But then they start bragging about, well, you know, we really won the big thing in there by including that hike in the minimum wage, bringing the federal rate from $5.15 up to $7.25. Now, I hope all the people that are working for $5.15, and there's a significant number in the country doing that. I hope everybody making $5.15 doesn't think they're going to start getting $7.25 in the next couple of weeks, because that's not how it works. Better hold off on popping the champagne corks on that. This bold stroke on their behalf by the congressional Democrats, it won't happen right away. America's lowest paid workers have been slaving away at $5.15 an hour since last September 1st, and they won't get the first part of the new pay increase until the end of this summer. Did you know this? Doesn't go to $7.25 right now. The end of this summer, it's going to go up to $5.85 an hour for somebody, and that's about, what, $28 a week for somebody working a 40-hour week. And they'll have to wait around until around this time next year before they'll get another boost up to $6.55 an hour. And they won't get the full $7.25 an hour that the Democrats are hooting about until 2009. So by then, they'll be just as far behind as they are now. Cost of living will go up and so forth, inflation, whatnot. And remember, we're talking about blood money here. There was a raise paid for in the blood of American service people and the blood of tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians, many of them innocent children. And really, that whole raise of 40% over 2 years is going to look a lot less by the time they get it, thanks to the actions of Junior Bush and this Democratic Congress. Well, it will. You figure that the Iraq war, which is costing the nation at this point over $300 billion a year in cold cash, and probably double that if you factor in the credit on the debt, because, yes, we're paying interest on that debt. The whole thing's being paid for on credit. That's a major reason the dollar's shrinking against other major currencies. That means higher prices for most imported goods. That means when you go to Walmart, you're going to be paying more, which means just about everything that working stiffs have to buy is going to be paying for more. It also means higher than necessary interest rates because, you know, keeping interest rates high relative to other countries is the only way that the U.S. has left to keep the dollar from crashing totally and getting down to the level of some sort of a third world currency. And those higher interest rates mean higher mortgage costs and higher credit card interest payments to working people. And don't forget the gas prices. Of course, the oil companies are going to tell you that the doubling of gas prices since Bush took office is all a matter of market forces. But you know the truth on that by now. The truth is it's mostly been the war and the threats to Middle East supplies that have bid up the per barrel price and allowed the gouging to happen. And make no mistake, we are being gouged by the oil companies in record amounts. So when you net the whole thing out, it's likely that this higher minimum wage that Democrats have bragged about, this higher minimum wage that they just bought at the price of giving Bush his war money, the increase is going to vanish by the time the people even get it. And besides, the federal minimum wage increase is a whole lot less of a deal than it might appear. because a lot of states have already raised the minimum wage for their workers. In California, workers earn at least $7.50 an hour. That goes to $8 an hour next January. And in New York, the minimum wage is already $7.15. It's also $7.15 in Alaska, and it will be on July the 1st in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And Illinois workers currently earn $6.95 an hour. You're going to see their minimum go up to $7.50 on July 1st. And a lot of other states have minimum wages close to or above the $7 an hour already. So that's some big deal the Democrats made with Bush, huh? They stood out in the halls afterwards and bragged about it. Didn't amount to a tinker's dam, as my grandpa used to say. Here they are bargaining with this president that's got a, depending on what poll you look at, anywhere from a whopping 28 to 32%. They're bargaining with a guy like that. And they come away with what? Almost nothing. And you wonder why Harry Reid's approval rating is down to 19%? You wonder why Nancy's is floating around 36%? You wonder why the approval rating for Congress is in the toilet? That's why. That's exactly why. This Congress hasn't done a lot so far. We had that first 100-hour program by Nancy Pelosi. And what have they really done since? Really. There are many things that they should get done. They're ignoring many things that they really need to get done. All this rhetoric coming out with these phony fights with Bush that never materialize on the Democratic side. Again, they're getting their asses kicked by the Republican minority. They need to pass a resolution. They need to pass some bills. They need to pass a resolution, for one thing, due to some recent rulings that we all know about. They need to pass a resolution saying that it's affirmed that all U.S. citizens and other individuals under U.S. jurisdiction might once again enjoy the protection of habeas corpus. Remember that? Habeas corpus, as specified in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution? They might want to pass a resolution saying that. And they should say it specifically that way, that it's affirmed that all U.S. citizens and other individuals under U.S. jurisdiction enjoy the protection, because I could be wrong, but I don't think the word citizen ever appears in the Bill of Rights. So they need to make it broad enough that everyone under U.S. jurisdiction is protected under habeas corpus. And if they do that, therefore, that means all persons in custody at Guantanamo and other prisons need to either be charged with a crime and given a fair trial, or released. That is the American way, or at least it was up until now. And they need to pass a resolution that the Guantanamo facility needs to be closed, and that these so-called rendition of prisoners to other countries to stop right now. And they need to stop torturing these so-called enemy combatants. How is that making us look to the rest of the world? Oh, you don't care how we look to the rest of the world because we're tough Americans? I care. We better care. Like I've always said. You know, you look back on the old our gang comedies where Butch, the bully. That's us right now. And the bully's going to go around and he's going to get his pound of flesh from everybody he can get it from. But sooner or later, all of those little guys that Butch the Bully beat up on are going to band together and kick Butch's ass. That's what is going to happen sooner or later. They need to pass a resolution that all the provisions of this Patriot Act and the Military Provisions Act, all those things that violated the protections of the Constitution, need to be declared null and void. They need to do that, and they can't do it soon enough. And they need to do away with these signing statements by the President of the United States. He's made himself a little dictator with these signing statements. And if they had any real balls, if they really did, if the Congress, the Democratic Congress, did what they, what we the people want done, the things we know, they know we want done, they'd put some teeth behind some of these hearings. Don't you think? Don't you think by now that Attorney General Gonzalez should have been cited for perjury and obstruction of justice and contempt to Congress and then throw his ass out? Don't you think by now that the Congress should have done that? Instead, they sit up there and just talk. Hearings are fine. Brings out the truth. But hell, act on them. When you find out that these things are happening right under your nose, and an Attorney General of the United States and some of his people come before Congress and lies over and over and over again and obstructs justice and are in contempt of Congress and you don't do anything about it, and they need to have some guts and end the funding of this Iraq occupation, because that's what it is. It is an occupation by a foreign army into a sovereign nation. End all the funding for this Bush-Iraq war, except for the money that it takes to bring the Americans home. All of it except for that. And then they need to take a good look, a good hard look into the theft and the thievery that has taken place and is probably partly responsible for this war in the first place, with some meaningful investigations with teeth and some indictments for some of these horrible war profiteers, the Halliburtons and the Bechtels, those kind of people. And if this Congress had any guts and they did what the people want, they'd have a serious investigation of election fraud by these e-voting machines and intimidation of voters, voters of color in particular, and the disenfranchisement through this caging that they do. Why doesn't Congress do something about that? There's no talk of that. And finally, if they had any guts, they'd issue bills of impeachment of Bush and Cheney. We have all these Democrats right now, so we have to be practical, you know. We have to be practical. They're saying that, that even if they could get impeachment through the House, that the Senate would fail the measure. I'm not sure of that. What I am sure is once they had some impeachment hearings and brought out all of the filth, forced these people in this administration to admit to all that they are guilty of, things we know they're guilty of, I think once the public saw that, I think the Senate would have the guts to go ahead and impeach these people. I think once the light of truth was shown on all the filth and corruption by this Bush administration, I don't think the Senate politically would have a very hard time going ahead with impeachment of these two. Had all this talk before the election, and then where's it gone? It's gone nowhere. And here we are, the Democratic voters, the progressive voters, whatever moniker you like, I'm a Democrat. What are we supposed to do? We've had the Republicans that have absolutely, over the past few years, totally betrayed the trust put in them by the American public. Instead of protecting the Constitution of the United States, they've shredded it, they've stomped on it, they've wadded it up in a ball and thrown it into the wastebasket. And And so here we are now with the Democratic-controlled Congress. I shouldn't say controlled. Democratic-majority Congress. The Republicans still control it, as we well know. What are we to do? We have these internecine fights amongst ourselves. What should we do? I know many of you say, hell with them. Let's vote for third-party candidates. You know, on first blush, it's not a bad idea to teach Democrats a lesson. But you know the results of it. Voting for a third-party candidate, if you're a Democrat or a progressive, it doesn't do anything but keep the Republicans in power. And so what have we done if we do that? And many of you right now are looking at the Democrats with a great amount of disappointment, and perhaps even being the lesser of two evils. And so if we continue to support them, they're sitting there in Washington going, hey, I can do anything I want to, and I'm going to keep doing it because they keep putting me in office. I understand that point as well. I do think that every Democrat that voted for this Bush war and has not apologized for it and tried to make amends for it should be challenged in the primaries. Every single one of them. Got to bring some purity back to the party. And I don't mean we need to be so partisan that we can't cooperate with the other party on something, on good ideas. No one party should have their way all the time. That's how we get into these pickles in the first place. For a long, long time, the Democrats really and truly had no meaningful opposition in Washington, D.C., and did a lot of things that weren't so great for this country. There were many parts of Lyndon Johnson's great society that have done wonderful things. And there were other parts of it that were, well, not successful at all. And he was able to push through a lot of things that perhaps shouldn't have been. Huge spending programs that didn't amount to much. Because there was no meaningful opposition. So I'm not saying that this should be run the Republicans out of business. I'm not saying that at all. We need to have opposition. There needs to be dialogue. There needs to be debate. Whenever one power or one party is overly powerful, I don't think it's that good for the country. It's a problem. And I, as you well know, I think I may have mentioned to you after that appropriations bill, I sat here one day, I think it was the day after of it, and had my voter registration card laying out here, which I so proudly have had designated with a big D on it for many, many years, all my voting life. And I've always been so proud of that, that I was doing the right thing and belonged to the right party. But as I may have mentioned, and I'm not sure if I did or not, I looked at that the day after that appropriations bill for the Bush war. And seriously considered tearing it up. I didn't. But I took a long, hard look at it and reexamined my position. And just like many of you, very tempting to say, hey, I'll go independent. I'll go green. I'll do this. I'll do that. But that's not the answer. It's not the answer at all. All that does is further enable the Republicans to stay in power. And regardless of how you feel about it, you know, you stop and think back, doing that very thing. And yes, Al Gore ran a hell of a poor campaign. And yes, he had the world's worst vice presidential running mate. All of that's true. But you know as well as I that if many Democrats had not, and many, by many, I'm talking about a very small percentage, but still I don't know, what was it, a million people or so? If those votes had gone for Al Gore instead of Ralph Nader, George W. Bush would never have been the president of the United States. So I guess that's what I'm saying. Let's not cut off our nose to spite our face. As unhappy as we are right now with the actions of this Congress of the United States, and I know many, if not all of you, are just as unhappy as I am with them. Let's not, to repeat, cut off our nose to spite our faces. It's tough. It's tough looking at the actions of this Congress, or the inaction, and still backing them. It's very, very difficult. And as I've mentioned today and as I've mentioned before, I don't have a lot of faith in Harry Reid at all. I think Harry Reid is an extremely poor and weak Senate Majority Leader. You know, he's getting his dues paid, you know, he's getting paid back for the years he's put in and all that, and he's played a great deal of backroom politics to get to be the Majority Leader. That's how it is in every single case. But Harry Reid is not the kind of guy that's a real leader to get up and lead the Senate, the majority. He's just not that kind of a man. He may be a decent follower, but he sure as hell no leader. If you disagree with me, I hope you'll call me, 866-546-5254. You might be right near, sitting there right now just chafing and going, what the hell is Guy talking about that he thinks Harry Reid is a very weak and ineffectual majority leader? Well, that is my opinion. I do believe that with all my heart and soul. I think there are a dozen guys in the Senate. Well, probably out of 50, and I'm not going to say 51 because I'm certainly not going to include that idiot from Connecticut. But out of 50, there are probably 40 of them that make better Senate majority leaders than Harry Reid. If you're listening, Harry, call me. Defend yourself. Somehow I don't think he is. And the sad part is, somehow I don't think he cares. I don't think any of them do. They take a look at the polls, see which way the wind's blowing, and do the right thing by themselves. And I guess that's my bitch with the entire thing right now. They do the right thing for themselves. They do what's politically expedient for their own political careers, and have very little regard for the constituency. Very little regard for those of us that put them in office and why we put them in office. And the ideals that we stand for and the things we hope they would do for us. But instead, we're faced with inaction. We're faced with weakness. We're faced with political cowardice. Somehow I think we're getting used to it. I hope not. I hope we can still stand up and go toe-to-toe with them and let them know we're not happy every single day. I do. I call at least one of them every day. We're going to pause for news right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Music director Billy Sears at BillySearsMusic.com. And we're going to be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is meeting with Senate Republicans today to discuss the controversial immigration bill. Making a rare appearance on the Hill, the president will try to persuade fellow Republicans to save the measure he said is a sound bill, which gives instant legal status to 12 million immigrants who are here unlawfully. Civil war looms closer in the Palestinian territories after Fatah security forces ignored a demand by the armed wing of Hamas to abandon key military and intelligence positions. Gunmen from the Islamist group attacked the Fatah security headquarters. The homes of both the Palestinian prime minister and the prime minister of the nonviolent wing of Hamas have also been fired upon. At least 20 people have been killed since Saturday. In Darfur, the Sudanese government has agreed to allow joint peacekeeping with non-African UN troops. The plan would call for the African Union to maintain control of daily operations, while the UN would have overall control of the more than 17,000 peacekeeping forces. The timetable for the deployment of UN troops is still being decided. In a remote checkpoint in eastern Afghanistan, a friendly fire incident this morning killed 7 Afghan police and wounded another 3. Afghan police and U.S. troops exchanged fire when Afghan forces mistook a U.S. convoy for Taliban fighters. No Americans were killed in the incident. In North Carolina, County Prosecutor Mike Nifong was in court today defending his actions in the Duke LaCrosse case. The state's bar has charged the county attorney with several violations of the state's rules of professional conduct, including withholding evidence and lying. If found guilty, Nifong could be disbarred. Today, the Dalai Lama said it was a mistake to try and slow down China's economic or military growth. The Tibetan leader said Western nations should use their own economic strength to bring communist China into the mainstream of the world community, especially in the area of human rights. In The Hague, a paramilitary Serb leader was sentenced today to 35 years in prison for murdering and torturing hundreds of Croats during the 4-year ethnic cleansing campaign in the Krajina region. He was also convicted of cluster bombing Croatia's capital city of Zagreb. 3 National Guardsmen patrolling the border between Mexico and Texas have been arrested for smuggling illegal immigrants. According to law enforcement, the men charged the aliens as much as $3,000 a person to transport them over the border. In the Niger Delta, Nigerian rebels released a dozen foreign hostages today, including 5 Americans. The victims, all employees of foreign oil companies, are reported to be in good health. This is the Quality News Network.
To help offset global warming, each of us can help ease pollution of our environment in a variety of ways. At home, use less energy by turning off lights and switching to fluorescent bulbs. Weatherstrip doors and windows. Run the dishwasher only when full. Turn your water heater down to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Recycle household trash. U.S. households produce 21% of the country's global warming pollution, and just these few minor adjustments can make a big difference. On the road, slow down for better gas mileage, drive less, and keep your vehicle tuned up and tires properly inflated. For more information on what you can do to help reverse the effects of global warming, contact the Environmental Defense Fund online at fightglobalwarming.com. This Environmental Minute has been provided in the public service by the Quality News Network.
Chinese officials say the outbreak of algae that smothered one of the country's largest lakes was due to pollution. Lake Tai was overcome last month by the blue-green algae, forcing residents to drink and bathe in bottled water. The algae bloom lasted 6 days and was eventually washed out by rain and water from the Yangtze River. Researchers say the melting snow atop Mount Kilimanjaro is not linked to global climate change. Tanzania's great mountaintop has been losing ice for over a century, and scientists say it's due to solar radiation, since the air around the top is rarely above freezing. NASA says problems with a damaged thermal blanket on the space shuttle Atlantis will mean the astronauts' mission will be extended by 48 hours. The blanket was peeled back during the shuttle's launch last Friday. Google has accused Microsoft of stifling competition. The issue is a desktop search function, which is included in the purchase of Microsoft's latest operating system and the free version offered by Google. According to a 49-page document filed by Google to the U.S. Justice Department, Vista impairs the operation of Google's free version of the feature. Texas Instruments has lowered its mid-quarter revenue expectations, disappointing Wall Street. The chipmaker says the company was experiencing diminished demand for calculators and chips used in wireless technology. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $65 right now on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and the Dow Jones is up 16. The NASDAQ is up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Guy James, indeed, here with the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the network. You know, if you haven't heard all the other shows on the Head On Radio Network, you owe it yourself to do so. Foxed Up. Bob Kincaid, Mark Levine. You need to listen to these other programs. You really do. You're gonna Dr. Bill. You're gonna find some very, very good programming on this network. You might just be surprised, okay? You just might be surprised. 866-546-5254. And if you've got lots of minutes to use or don't have to pay for minutes like Vonage and all that sort of thing, you can call us at 941-876-6896 or at our Washington Bureau, 202-370-6153, and Phoenix Bureau, 623-444-5252. Is that enough numbers for you? Please do give us a call. We would enjoy hearing from you. Now, here's a scary thought. I don't like to scare my listeners, but this is a scary thought, and I'm sure some of you've heard this. Lynn Cheney, the wife of Vice President Cheney, better known as Darth Cheney on this program, is being floated in the Senate GOP leadership circles as a possible replacement for the late Senator Craig Thomas of Wyoming, who died Monday night. That's a week ago, Monday night. Wyoming law ensures that the Thomas seat will ensures that the seat's going to remain in Republican hands. They have a Democratic governor, but they have a law in Wyoming that he must put a Republican in, since it's a Republican it was already in. I don't know. What do you think about Lynn Cheney being in the United States Senate? Hillary Clinton's in there. Liddy Dole's in there. I think who else wanted to be. So is that a good idea? We'd like to remind some people, we'd like to remind everybody of Lynn Cheney, lest you think she's just some diminutive, nice second lady. In December of 2006, she argued that putting Scooter Libby on trial, quote, does not reflect well on our judicial system, I see, end quote. The whole judicial system is wrong for even putting poor Scooter on trial. Scooter, of course, being the good friend and confidant of her husband, Darth Cheney. Poor Scooter. And in October of 2006, Cheney called the media's portrayal of the NSA domestic spy program a terrible distortion of both the president and the vice president's position on many issues. She said that because CNN used the phrase domestic surveillance to describe the so-called terrorist surveillance program. And in October 2004, when Senator John Kerry, the Democrat of Massachusetts, referred to Cheney's lesbian daughter Mary as an example of a healthy gay person loved by her family. Now imagine that. That's an exact quote of what he said. That Mary Cheney was an example of a healthy gay person loved by her family, end quote. Lynn Cheney said to Kerry, about Kerry, this is a bad man. And in December of 2005, Lynn Cheney must have been drunk. I hear she has a nip or two now and then. She said, she falsely suggested that her husband, Vice President Darth Cheney, had not attempted to link Saddam Hussein and 9/11. And he'd done it I don't know how many times before then and multiple times after that. And she also had the temerity to criticize then-Senate candidate Jim Webb for including sexually explicit material in his novels. She said that despite writing a novel that contained multiple scenes describing a lesbian love affair. So what's good for the goose is not necessarily the gander. And do remember, this woman sleeps with Dick Cheney. Does that even make her human? I'm not sure. 866-546-5254. Join us, won't you? Did a little traveling over the weekend and had a chance once again to experience the absurdities of some of the things that go on at the airport searching us. First of all, the deal about taking your shoes off, you know, because that guy had the explosive power of two or three firecrackers in his shoes that time, that goofy looking guy, you remember him, I'm sure. We all have to take our shoes off right now. That's a lot of fun. I think I'll start wearing house slippers. That's a good idea. Just some slippers and be comfy while I'm traveling. And then, you know, your belt buckle sets the thing off, and you got to take your belt buckle off, and it's so much fun. And you've got all your change and your watch and your cell phone and your laptop and everything else in these little containers. And so they are with about your shoes and three or four of these containers with all your junk in it going through there. There's 500 people in line, all mumbling and grumbling about the same thing. And then this one guy gets flagged, and while I was putting my shoes on, I had a chance to watch him take his suitcase and open it. And before they open it, they told him, says, "We must warn you that while we're searching your suitcase, examining your case, please do not touch anything that's in it at all. Please keep your hands on that side of the table." So this old guy, he's about, 83, 84 years old. He looked like a dangerous terrorist. Standing there with his shoes off. Had a hole in his sock, by the way. He's standing there with his shoes off, looking terribly concerned while this woman goes through his stuff. And she pulls out a bottle of shampoo. And this was a case he was going to carry on, of course. And there was this bottle of shampoo. And in the bottle, it's a 12-ounce bottle of shampoo. And there can't be an ounce left in the bottom of it. That's all that's in it. She says, "Well, I'm going to have to take this. You know you can't have this." Mind you, you can take a 3-ounce bottle with you. But he couldn't have the ounce that was in the bottom of that bottle. Now, maybe one of you knows a good reason why this shouldn't be allowed, but I don't. Then they pulled out his toothpaste. Now, this is a frugal old man, I'm sure. I'm a bit frugal myself. And he's got a half-empty, maybe two-thirds empty tube of toothpaste in there. All rolled up like people do, you know. Are you a roller or are you a squeezer? Do you leave it flat and squeeze it all out, or do you roll it up a little bit at a time? Anyway, he's got about maybe a third of that tube left in there. That's all. Can't have this. However, one of those small tubes would be all right. What's the difference? And she went through all of his stuff and confiscated all his toothpaste and his toiletries and everything. Took it all, and the old man's just standing there looking at her like, "What the hell?" Yeah, I know. Odd situation. Very, very odd situation. Do you feel any safer when you fly because of that? I really don't. I must admit I'm one of those people. I love to fly. I get on a plane. I've never once, knock on wood, felt unsafe in an airplane. Got delayed considerably the other day, and not long ago got delayed on a plane because they said something wasn't working right in the plane, and, you know, half the people wouldn't get back on the plane because they said there's a malfunction on it. I always figured if that pilot's got guts enough to fly it, I've got guts enough to go with him. I figure he knows best. But it just seems to me that some of the things that go on at airports are a bit silly. I could be wrong. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Do you remember the Kellogg's Rice Krispies jingle?
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, slap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies.
Well, this week on Foxed Up, you will be surprised to know just who composed that jingle and the band who recorded it. So join us this Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern with John Fox on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Pops the sound, the best is missed unless Pops around.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
And now a message from the president.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for being with us here today. Give us a call at 866-546-5254. I don't have to tell you the number. You know the number. Well, maybe except for some of you new folks. Welcome to the program, and if you're brand new, all you folks listening over in iTunes and Democrats.com and so forth, glad to have you with us. I see General Wesley Clark, and thank you, General Clark, has stuck it to Joe Lieberman. We mentioned earlier Lieberman's crazy comments that if the Iranians don't play by the rules, we've got to use our force. And to me, that would include taking military action to stop them from doing what they're doing. And General Wesley Clark said, Lieberman's saber-rattling does nothing to help dissuade Iran from aiding Shia militias in Iraq or trying to obtain nuclear capabilities. In fact, it's highly irresponsible and counterproductive, and I urge him to stop. General Clark goes on to say this kind of rhetoric is irresponsible, and I agree, and only plays into the hands of President Ahmadinejad and those who seek an excuse for military action. What we need now is full-fledged engagement with Iran. We should be striving to bridge the gulf of almost 30 years of hostility, and only when all else fails should there be any consideration of other options. The Iranians are very much aware of U.S. military capabilities. They don't need, says General Clark, they don't need Joe Lieberman to remind them that we're the militarily dominant power in the world today. And here's the one I really like that General Clark said. Only someone who never wore the uniform or thought seriously about national security would make threats at this point. What our soldiers need is responsible strategy, not a further escalation of tensions in the region. Senator Lieberman must act more responsibly and tone down his threat machine. Thank you, General Clark. I do appreciate those remarks. I sincerely do, and I know many of us do, if not millions of us do. Are you surprised? Of course, it's been nothing but quiet for a long time now. Are you surprised that General Clark didn't mount a campaign this time around? I think it's been obvious for a long time that he wasn't going to, but after the last election, I thought that he probably, the last primary, I was thinking that he probably used that as a learning experience and would mount a serious campaign this time around. I really thought so. I admire the man greatly. I really do. And I thought he really and truly would put forth a heavy-duty campaign this time around. But for some reason, he's decided not to, and more power to him. He's decided that he can be helpful in other ways, or he's decided that maybe he didn't have a chance. I don't know, for whatever reason. We shall see as time goes on. I'm offended by Bowtie Boy, Tucker Carlson. He's not Bowtie Boy anymore, former Bowtie Boy. As you have probably noticed on his program, he has gone to the wall for Scooter Libby. And he has excoriated the foes of Scooter Libby and those of us all around the country that thought Scooter Libby is getting exactly what is coming to him. And he's just stood up for him every single time I've seen him. Now, maybe he said something to the effect of what I think he ought to say, but not that I have seen so far. Did you know that one of Scooter Libby's most ardent defenders, Richard Carlson, a former chief of the Voice of America, who serves as a member of a defense trust set up for Libby, he reacts to Patrick Fitzgerald's latest filing, which again states that Valerie Plame was covert. Here's Tucker Carlson's father saying, I think it's certainly unseemly that he's kicking him while he's down. For Fitzgerald to get on his high horse, it's disgusting and he should be ashamed of himself. Richard Carlson is the bow-tied father of former bow-tied, now straight-tied, television pundit Tucker Carlson, and said he sent a courier with a check to Libby's Virginia home on the morning of his perjury indictment. Shouldn't Tucker Carlson come out and tell his entire audience this? Shouldn't he? Isn't it a bit unethical and unseemly for Tucker Carlson to go on the air and defend him time after time and not tell the entire public that his own father is a member of the Defense Trust for Libby? Isn't it? I don't know. I don't think it's right. I think he owes his listening audience an explanation. Maybe he's given one that I haven't seen, but I don't think so. I very carefully read the transcript of what Bush says when he's overseas, even when he's here at home. I think he's a loaded bomb ready to explode at any time. And I found this quote, and it was on the White House website in Germany at the G8 last week, upon meeting Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Here they are, exact words of George Bush. I reminded the Prime Minister that his great country and great economy is going to lead the way when it comes along with the United States in leading the way coming to develop technologies that will enable us to change our energy habits and at the same time be good stewards of the environment. Can anybody make sense of what this man says? I certainly can't. And I did want to go back to the Carlson thing for just a moment. A lot of Republicans now, and your Mary Madelines and all those types of people, are saying that this judge has no right to treat the poor man this way, Mr. Libby. Let me give you a few facts about Judge Reggie Walton, who is sentencing Libby. Did sentence Libby. He was first appointed to a judgeship on the D.C. Superior Court in 1981 by none other than St. President Ronald Reagan. He served as Associate Director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and then in 2001 was appointed to the federal bench by President Bush. In 2004, Bush named Walton to chair a commission investigating ways to curb inmate rape, and last month, Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. appointed him to a seat on the respected Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. So please, all ye right-wingers, give us a break, and let's not be moaning and bitching and complaining about this judge, who is obviously ruled in the interest of fairness, ruled in the interest of the rule of law, and has put partisan politics aside. He's a hardcore Republican, and still, because the law is on his side and because he wanted to do what's right, he gave Scooter Libby a sentence that I think is appropriate. Going to pause for a break. A little ditty here by Kathy Griffin. You all know her on Ann Coulter. We'll be back in a minute.
I have to tell you about the last time I was on the Today Show, because you know I'm banned from all the shows. I'm banned from, I'm banned from Conan and Leno and Ellen, which that one hurts because I love her. But I get it. She's in the business of being nice to celebrities, and I'm in the opposite business. Right? Okay, so anyway, I got to go on the Today Show, and that's a big deal for me, right? A big national show, and I'm promoting my life on the D-list stuff. But here's the kicker. I got to go on the same day that crazy bitch Ann Coulter said that shit about the 9/11 widows. Remember when she said that they were a bunch of harpies who had it coming and those guys were going to divorce them anyway, like all that shit? Okay, so I'm watching the show because I wasn't even at 30 Rock yet. You know, it starts at 7. And there's crazy Ann Coulter, who, I will say one thing. I have to admit, she does crack me up, and here's why. She's bonkers, but don't you think she's kind of like the naughty poster girl of those old conservative dudes, right? Like, you know when Rumsfeld is beating off, he's like, oh, suck it, Ann, right? You know Dick Cheney's like, oh, teabag my shit, Ann. She's on there at 7 in the morning. morning in the middle of Rockefeller Center in the still working the black mini cocktail dress, like it's the 80s and she's in the Robert Palmer video. The lights are on and you're not home. All right, so that cracks me up too. So she's sitting there in the middle of New York saying these horrible things about the 9/11 widows. And you know how when you're sort of paying attention to the TV and you can't believe you heard it correctly, so you turn into Scooby-Doo? So she's like, they're a bunch of harpies. And I'm all, whoo. And then she actually said they should take that money and keep their mouths shut. Whoo. Now, I will tell you that as an American, I was incredibly offended. But as a comedian, come on, I live for that shit. I was like, Jessica, send her a muffin basket. So.
The Pentagon confirmed to CBS 5 today military leaders once proposed building a so-called gay bomb, a chemical weapon that could be dropped on enemy troops to make them sexually irresistible to each other. Here's CBS 5 political editor Hank Plant. Hank?
Well, Alan, it was an Air Force lab that proposed this to the Pentagon officials, and it was a Berkeley-based watchdog group that found out about this strange idea for a weapon. Edward Hammond of Berkeley's Sunshine Project tracks military spending. He used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain this proposal from the Air Force's Wright Laboratory to build what's been called a gay bomb. The weapons proposal says, one distasteful but completely non-lethal example would be strong aphrodisiacs, especially if the chemical also caused homosexual behavior.
The Ohio Air Force lab proposed that a bomb be developed that contained a chemical that would cause enemy soldiers to become gay and to have their units break down because all of the soldiers became irresistibly attractive to one another.
The Air Force lab asked for $7.5 million to develop such a bomb.
The notion was that a chemical that would probably normally be present in the human body in low quantities could be identified, and by virtue of either breathing or having their skin exposed to this chemical, the notion was that soldiers would become gay.
The Pentagon confirms that such a proposal was made, but rejected as part of the military search for non-lethal weapons. A spokesperson told us, the Department of Defense is committed to identifying, researching, and developing non-lethal weapons that will support our men and women in uniform. But proposing a gay bomb is offensive to people like Hayward's Hong Nguyen, who was dismissed from the Army under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, the proposal saying that, you know, the gay bomb would encourage this distasteful behavior, homophobic behavior, is just offensive on its face, period.
And gay community leaders find the idea almost laughable.
Throughout history, we have had so many brave men and women who are gay and lesbian serving the military with distinction. So it's just offensive that they think that by turning people gay, that would somehow make the other militaries incapable of doing their job. And it's absurd because there's so much scientific and medical data that shows that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed.
The Pentagon says the proposal was made by the Air Force in 1994 and dismissed. But that is not what the Berkeley watchdog group found.
So when the Pentagon says it didn't really go anywhere, it was dismissed out of hand.
That's not correct. The truth of the matter is that it would never have come to my attention if it had been dismissed at the time that it was proposed. In fact, the Pentagon has used it repeatedly, subsequently, in efforts to promote non-lethal weapons. And in fact, they submitted it to the highest scientific review body in the country for them to consider.
This gay bomb.
That's correct.
For the record, the military says it is not working on a gay bomb right now.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. And out on the edge of dawn, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things that awful peace train sounding loud.
With you here on the Guy James Show on this Tuesday afternoon. Kind of an uneventful Tuesday afternoon so far. Things are fairly quiet. I had originally thought that Judge Walton was going to decide today. Was I all wet on that? Did I misunderstand that? That he was going to decide today, Judge Walton was going to decide today whether or not Scooter had to go directly to jail, not pass go, do not collect $200. And wait for his appeal while actually in jail? Or is he going to let him free pending appeal, which could take, as you well know, wheels of justice don't run very fast in this country, usually. Isn't this something, how they're able to try, convict, and hang Saddam Hussein in Iraq in not very much time at all? But they figure an appeal on an obstruction of justice and lying charge, a perjury charge, would take a couple of years in this country. Isn't that a bit strange? We're talking about a brand new democracy over there, brand new court system and all, and they were able to get something pushed right through there, get old Saddam hung very quickly. And yet here we are with the most advanced court system and democracy in the world, so to speak. They tell us anyway. And we can't get Scooter through the court system any faster than a couple of years. I don't know why that should be. We're always interested on this program, and we endeavor to bring you the very latest news and the important news of the day. And I found this story that I thought was extremely important, especially talking about court appeals and people going to jail and so forth, and poor Scooter Libby. And so I hope those who are criticizing Judge Walton for sentencing Scooter to, what was it, 30 months in prison? I would hope they would keep in mind the plight of this poor woman, compare their crimes, and see if Judge Walton is being unjust at all. I ran across the story today. Police blame a woman named Butts, for stealing toilet paper, I swear this is true, from a central Iowa courthouse. And while they're chuckling, the theft charge could put her in prison. She's facing potentially 3 years of incarceration for three rolls of toilet paper, Chief Lawn Marker said, stifling a laugh as he talked to KCCI-TV about Suzanne Marie Butts. He said, "See, I can't say it with a straight face." Workers had noticed the rolls disappearing from the Marshall County Courthouse much faster than usual, Walker said. I wonder if that's Marshall, Iowa. I know where Marshall is. Butts, 38, was caught last week after an employee saw her taking three rolls of two-ply tissue from a storage closet, Walker said. Now, I have a question about this right off. What is the Marshall County Courthouse doing, splurging, spending extra money on two-ply toilet tissue when they should be buying the cheap stuff? Since this is public money they're spending, why are they getting the good stuff at the courthouse? That's what I want to know. But anyway, they saw her taking three rolls of two-ply tissue from a storage closet. Butch insisted it was the first time that she'd pilfered toilet paper, but she declined to answer further question on her attorney's advice. The fifth-degree theft charge, a misdemeanor, normally carries a sentence of less than a year in jail. But Butts could face more time if convicted under the state's habitual offender law because she has prior theft convictions. Walker did not know why Butts was at the courthouse, but said she did not work there. Now, I wonder what the prior convictions were. One has to wonder. Did she take some of those little deodorant cakes they throw in the urinals? Did she steal some of those? Stealing toilet paper could get her 3 years in the pokey. Three rolls, 3 years. Do they have a statute in Texas or in Iowa law that it's an automatic year, a year a roll? Is that the deal? I'm not making fun of Iowans. I love Iowa. I do. A lot of people think Iowa's a boring place, but having been born and raised in a farm community, I love Iowa. I love the big cornfields and all. And you go out there west of Des Moines just a little bit to Winterset, Iowa, where John Wayne was born and raised. And I don't know if he was raised there, but he was born there. The little white house on the corner. Beautiful little town, Winterset, Iowa. It's where the Bridges of Madison County was filmed. And you can go out in Madison County and see all the covered bridges and all that. Yeah, nice place. Anyway, I do enjoy Iowa, and I wasn't making fun of you folks, but that is a funny story, you have to admit. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call. I did see that what has become a forgotten story in this country, and it really has become a forgotten story, the tragedy of Katrina down on our Gulf Coast. Now, Anderson Cooper was in New Orleans as part of CNN's Keeping Them Honest series, and they did pieces on the levees and the pumps and the apparent suicide of one of the New Orleans police officers that was involved in a widely publicized post-Katrina police brutality case. And they talked about the 100 unclaimed remains of Katrina victims still waiting in a New Orleans warehouse for burial, and crime in New Orleans, and a piece on FEMA trailers that were returned to that agency that were vandalized and trashed. I had a question I wish somebody could explain to me. 100 unclaimed remains of Katrina victims? How can that be? Were these people that lived alone? But nobody, is it the case that entire neighborhoods were gone, and so nobody knows who died and who didn't? You live on a street next to a little old lady or something, and everybody got washed out, everybody's gone, everybody's been displaced, and so nobody knows who's alive and who's dead. And that's very, very sad. Tragic, actually. 100 unclaimed remains of Katrina victims still waiting in a New Orleans warehouse for burial. And I must ask the question, why haven't they been buried? But the FEMA trailer story was really what CNN was really after here. And it was a good thing that Cooper went and checked on New Orleans to see how things are going and all that. But here they go after the most sensational part of the whole thing, and what they think makes the best news. Not necessarily what is the best news, but they think, well, here's the best story. The FEMA trailers. They said that FEMA officials said that nearly 10% of those trailers come back unfit to use again. 10% of them, less than 10%. So 90% of the folks who've returned trailers, and a lot of folks down there are still living in the trailers, 90% of the people took care of them. But CNN nationally goes down there and gets a story with FEMA to get a video of a trailer that got bullet holes in it and another one that's got the fixtures stripped out of it. And they got to show that video. And, of course, you have Anderson Cooper standing there reminding everybody that the FEMA trailers were paid for by taxpayers. And he said, that was your money, all of our money. Well, the question needs to be asked, if the concern is taxpayers' money, how about going down there and doing a piece on the multi-billion dollar fraud against the insurance companies? And they passed on the inflated flood damage claims into these now bankrupt National Flood Insurance Program while their own profits went through the roof. That was public money, too. That was your money and my money as well. And what about the mess of the Road Home program? Again, your money. That's billions of taxpayers' money in those two important stories alone. Instead, America's going to hear, from now until the cows come home, about a small minority of New Orleans residents who messed up their trailers. When you stop and think about the scope of everything that went on down there, and all the problems of getting that area into a recovery mode and getting recovered, the sad part of it is that after watching CNN, there are going to be a lot of people walk away from watching that story thinking that that FEMA trailer story is the big story from there, and it is not. It is not at all. Far from it. It's amazing how one of the worst tragedies that ever happened in this country has ended up at the bottom of the barrel, and the people, the folks with nothing, that had nothing, those are the ones that have been abandoned by our society. But isn't it always the case? We'll be back in a moment. Here we are back on the Guy James Show. Oh, maybe about 7 minutes left in the program today. You can call us at 866-546-5254 if you'd like. I do want to mention a couple of more things about this Scooter Libby thing. That's been on my mind. I just can't stomach the hypocrisy by the Republicans on this. I really can't, as you well know. And I guess we're all the same. Hypocrisy is something that just boils my blood. And sometimes I think there ought to be a big handle somewhere in Washington, D.C. that the public could pull and flush the whole place clean. And this latest episode involving Scooter Libby, it's the perfect example of what I mean. And this letter to the judge from Alan Simpson, former senator from Wyoming, Alan Simpson, which I can't stand the guy anyway. It's more revealing of the monumental hypocrisy that takes place there than anything I've come across on this subject so far. Let me read you this letter from Alan Simpson. He writes, Scooter to the judge. He says, Scooter's not some hard-hearted partisan who delights in subterfuge or cover-up or mendacity. He's a splendid human being. I shall always remain puzzled how the situation ever came to this. Some are of the opinion that he has fallen upon his sword, and yet it is my perception that the sword has fallen on him. When I think of what had happened to him, words fail me, and who of my friends would believe that one? Because all of this is so totally inconsistent with the basic attribute and the reputation of the man I know. From my knowledge of him, I say without equivocation or hesitation whatsoever that Scooter Libby is a very good man. Sweet, isn't it? Scooter lies out the wazoo to the federal prosecutor, and Simpson says he's a very good man. He lies out the wazoo to cover up for Dick Cheney, and Simpson says he's a very good man. That's okay if it's the same standard you'd hold everybody else to, but that's not the case now, is it? Here's another quote from Simpson about another guy who lied. Alan Simpson. There's only one question here, said the former senator. Did he raise his right hand and lie about it and then lie again? Lying under oath, that to me is all there is. Did this man, whether he is head of the hardware store or the president or applying for a game and fishing license, did he raise his hand and say, this is the truth, end quote. He's speaking about Bill Clinton in that one. Isn't it interesting how these Republicans can turn it on and off? One guy is a filthy liar for lying to a grand jury, and another is a splendid human being. How do you justify that kind of attitude? How can you look yourself in the mirror? You know, the Washington, D.C. community, it's their village, you know. The whole place gets all sanctimonious about Bill Clinton lying about a blowjob. They were just outraged. They were all talking about Bill had damaged the reputation of that pure and holy place. And you remember how holy Joe Lieberman was so judgmental? Holy Joe said about Clinton, his behavior so over the edge. What is troubling is the deceit, the failure to own up to it. Before this is over, the truth must be told. Truth, Joe? In Washington, D.C., Joe? Since when has the truth been a valuable and easily available commodity in Washington, D.C.? That's my question. Since when has the truth been the standard of behavior in Washington, D.C., Joe? And the keeper of the moral compass in Washington, D.C., the Washington Post, David Broder, said, and let me quote him, the judgment is harsher in Washington. We don't like being lied to. Dave, every other word coming from most of the politicians in your town is a lie. It's one of the main things your village is known for, Dave. Of course, if it's one of the boys, one of the insiders like Scooter who does the lying, well, it's not exactly lying. It's a fib. It's a bad memory. It's bending the truth a bit. It's just not that serious. I mean, after all, Scooter is one of the in crowd. He is and has been on the Washington, D.C. cocktail circuit for years, and that makes him immune to the type of harsh criticism reserved for those who might not fit in the Washington, D.C. village people. You know, you have to wonder, just what the judge was thinking as he read the many letters written to him, telling him what a tremendous human being Scooter is. Letters from known liars and scoundrels like Henry Kissinger, Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith, Mary Matlin. Hell, I'm surprised Ollie North and G. Gordon Liddy didn't add their own 2 cents worth. Let's face the facts here. Washington, D.C. is infested with liars. It is the world capital of liars, the Super Bowl of liars. It should pass out Oscars for the best liars. Nowhere on earth are there more prolific liars than in Washington, D.C. And this phony outrage from the right over poor Scooter's plight just proves my point. It's the best example of the pot calling the kettle black that I have ever seen. Well, we're going to be heading to that town next week for the Take Back America Conference. And once again, I do want to remind you, our show will be coming to you live on Monday and Tuesday, 3 to 5 p.m. from the Washington Hilton at the Take Back America Conference. We'll be on Radio Row there and meeting with some of our other liberal broadcaster friends, and we'll have a good show for you. I promise you that. I do enjoy going there, no matter if everybody in town is a liar or not, just about everybody. Anyway, thanks for listening to the program today. I always enjoy hearing from you, and hopefully you enjoy hearing from me as well. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget to catch BillyShearsMusic.com, music director of The Guy James Show. And don't forget, never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.